Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
World we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. We are so happy you could join us today, and we are looking forward to a wonderfully exciting show. Rogier Shadeh has prepared questions for us from your emails and the multiple emails from our email list that pour into our office, and we try actually to answer each and every one of them one way or the other. If not on the air, we also send out question-answer emails on a regular basis to address your concerns and your questions. So sign up today, if you can, on our website to join our email list, www.spiritualjourneys.com. Rogier, welcome, and thank you for preparing this for us.
You are welcome. The first question is, one of the sisters actually asking if monatomic gold powder is harmful or useful for that matter, or not.
All right, now I know nothing about it, so hold on, let me just take a moment. If it is purely prepared, it is not harmful. However, as beings, as people, go into their higher stages of development, it will stop having any influence. Something that else that is very helpful is rhodium and iridium. And in some formulas, there is some of that combined in there as well. Rhodium and iridium will feed the interpretive capabilities of the pineal gland. So it strengthens the vagus nerve system, and so it enables better communication with the hidden realms and better accessing of information, which is higher consciousness.
All right, but I do recall you mentioning something about rhodium and iridium previously in the conversation, but do you mean here the actual, the like how we might find it in a potion with actually as the gold, or how we can find it naturally as well?
Well, you can find it in powder form. Can the body assimilate it? The frequency of it will help, even if it is not assimilated and even if it moves through. However, it is found in aloe vera gel.
Right.
And the purest one on that I have found myself is the Lily of the Desert Aloe Vera Gel. And if people use a half a cup in the morning and a half a cup in the evening, over a few months, they will, in fact, find a difference. The other thing is there's a tea out. I think it's a Native American blend originally, but it's Essiac tea, E-S-S-I-A-C, tea. And it is very rich in rhodium and iridium and very conducive to expansive states.
Okay, that's good.
So, you know, with gold, one has to be careful not to overdose it, because any metals that go into the body, if there is an excess of them, it causes a psychological distortion like an overlay. For example, people that get gold... Now, it's a different form of gold than the one you are speaking of, but the gold shots that they get for arthritis, they all tend to end up with the same sort of symptoms. They tend to be very, very overly sentimental. They tend to fall in love easily. Yes, and there could be some suicidal tendencies eventually. So, you know, there you have to watch for it. There are very good homeopathic technicians out there. So if there are people taking gold, they need to take the homeopathic to counteract these effects.
Okay. All right. The next question comes from, well, she describes herself as having been in the previous being in the pagan traditions, but her question is really about the moon and is this natural or created?
Information has been leaking in over the last few years from various star brothers that the moon is contrived. It's not a natural moon. That it was brought in on the tail of a comet at one point, all sorts of things like that. The Hopis themselves have teachings in their very secret traditions that speak of pre-lunar times when the moon was real. And so they say they come from pre-lunar times when the moon was real. So I found the following to be the case. First of all, I found it to be a piece of technology, and this was some time ago when I actually, there were a group of beings that had gone into the moon, and I was sent by the Mother Goddess to go and negotiate with them, and I found it to be a large piece of technology. There are actual structures on the exterior of it. There are mining operations there going on for titanium, for example. But very, very recently, it was discovered that our moon had been abducted, if you will, so that its benign influences would not reach the Earth, and that it was present in Arcturus, in the Arcturus star system. And this was, my goodness, this is about some months before the end of 2007 that this was discovered. And so, you know, the mother has actually, in the twinkling of an eye, replaced the fake technological moon, if you will, with a real moon. It's very important that that's the case because the moon has libraries in it that contains ancient records of our life before the cycle of the fall. Many other type of records are kept in those libraries in the moon. And, of course, they weren't there because it wasn't our real moon.
But so our real moon is actually not a piece of technology then?
No, it isn't. It's a living being.
All right. And what what was the function of the sort of artificial one?
The artificial one was to disturb our reproduction cycles, to make us overpopulate. When things overpopulate, such as humanity, they can, you know, they become warped, they become hostile, they become aggressive. It also was used as a device of mind control in order to keep us in our infantile states spiritually.
Okay, that's interesting. And do you know if I'm not exactly sure what would be the case now, but I mean, have our governments been doing a lot of activity on the moon?
All I knew was that there was titanium mining going on, and it was not American, it was Russian. I saw that. But I don't know what they're doing now that the real moon is there. I haven't been asked to go there since it's been replaced.
All right. Let's see. The next question is really about what creates internal dialogue and whether internal dialogue is the same as the ego.
Yes. The ego is used for many things. Let's define the way that I would use it. People say you are in ego. That means you're very egocentric, meaning I, me, me. What can I do to enhance my life? That's not what we're talking about when we use these terms in discussing how we become free from the control of the ego. So that's not what we mean. What we do mean is ego being the left brain. And the left brain, if we look at the bodies of man that is somebody that is still in ego identification, you get the physical body, then you get the etheric body, which are bluish lines of light surrounding the body and sort of 2 inches out from the physical skin. Then you get the flow of color, which is the emotional body, which you can photograph on auric photography, the Carillion photography. Then about 18 inches out, there are golden lines of light. This is the mental body. The mental, the emotion, the etheric, and the physical form the 4 lower bodies. They are the equivalent in the cosmos to the vertical tree of life that most religions, the I Ching, the Dzogchen, and, the Torah, those are mapping out that 4 directions, the 4 lower bodies of existence. They are masculine. Hence, everybody has been praying only to a masculine deity in relation to that which is the 3 higher bodies. Because our religions didn't know that there is a horizontal tree of life, if you will. I only discovered this it was the time of the Venus transit across the sun in 2004 is when I discovered it. And the horizontal axis is the mother axis, and she is the one that birthed the father or the vertical axis. So in our own makeup of our 7 bodies, the 3 higher bodies are feminine in relation to the 4 lower bodies that represent the vertical. Now, just repeat your question really quickly.
Well, it's really twofold. The first part is really what creates internal dialogue.
Okay, so the ego is controlled by the vertical, by the masculine. The ego is the 18-inch out linear lines of light, which is the mental body saying, I won't let anything come in from the higher bodies that I can't control. So it cuts off the input for many from their higher body's vision, perception, guidance, etc. Because the 3 higher bodies is spiritual, emotional, again, coloring and flow, and again, a spiritual mental body, and then eventually you get what's called the spirit body, consisting of trillions of lines of light that emanate out from the life force center, which used to be behind the belly button, but Mother has recently moved it up to everyone's heart center. So those are the 3 higher bodies. The ego is that which is controlling the 4 lower bodies, and it's the left brain. The dialogue in the mind is the result of this control exercised by the mental body because it resists life. Because as long as it can talk to itself, it will maintain control. That's why the dialogue suppresses the non-cognitive information that comes in the form of feelings. And that's why people feel so rudderless, because all they can work within is the framework of the known. And the vast majority of life, like the next moment, like my words meaning like a person, all of that falls into the category of the unknown.
Okay, but then there's also a relation between internal dialogue and, let's say, suppressed memories, etc., right?
Yes, it's the way of suppressing anything that we don't want to deal with. That's why, you know, people that have had very traumatic experiences that are trying not to remember them or to, quote, get over them, which is not the way to do it, but they use this dialogue in the head to suppress it. They say they're afraid of boredom, and so they, you know, fill their life with sound and television and radio, but what they're afraid of is the silence. Because then they either have to deal with the dialogue and look at it, or they have to deal with what it's suppressing.
And that could not be pretty.
Exactly. Oh, you know, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after these commercials.
Albion continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces her readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness. The state of no longer identifying with the ego in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal mastery, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almeen's life was dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. And we have encountered some very interesting questions this morning, and Rogier has prepared them. And Rogier, thank you very much for being with us again, and please continue.
Okay. Let's see. We have a question here which, well, I'm not sure if this is a really vast or a really short one, but really, if there is a limit or a ceiling to ascension.
There isn't, unless you speak of ascension as only being the stages through which man can evolve. Man goes beyond that into the God kingdom. But that, too, is not a point of arrival. Their ascension as becoming more is part of life. So ascension really never stops. It's
okay.
Just that the way we've done the journey needs to stop, right?
It's
been through opposition instead of fun and discovery.
But would you say that now that is basically the reality, fun and discovery, or at least that it should be?
It is if we embrace it. If we still stay in marriages that don't work because we think it's doing everybody a favor, or, you know, we have to weigh the pros and the cons, or because of money, we don't want to leave the partner, or because of, not believing in ourselves, we are in work that doesn't suit us well. Instead of trying to find something new, breaking away and breaking free whenever there's an opportunity, keep working, but put your resumes out there. Examine opportunities. Start something in the weekends that you hope can build into full time. Those sorts of things need to be done in order to put fun and joy and happiness back in our life. There's nothing wrong with working. It's part of the pulsation of life. But it needs to provide us with joy.
All right. Let's see.
You know, might I add something? There, usually the new does not present itself until we do the old flawlessly, gratefully, and joyfully. So even if the work we are doing doesn't suit us, for us to bring in a new one, we must do before us what is before us with joy and glory. That's what pulls in the new one.
Okay, so sitting there and sort of thinking that, you know, we really should get out of there as quickly as possible because we'll be happy at another sort of place of work might not really be the case then.
Assess it. Once you assess it, you take the action. But for example, I was years ago in a relationship where this beautiful little daughter of mine had to be adopted, but I had to get on firm ground first because she had been my baby for some years, but I was still in a position where she could be used as a tool against me in that relationship. And I waited it out for 2 years, but I had a plan for the 2 years to get myself on firm ground so that her life would not yet again end up with an abandonment. And so this beautiful little adopted daughter then became, you know, eventually more steps had to be put in place, but she became my own. This is the result of planning. It doesn't mean that we just abandon ship immediately, but it does mean that we plan our way out of it. Then as we plan it out of it, every moment we make the best of what is in front of us by seeing it thankfully as a means of living.
Okay, that's clear. Well, this question here seems quite obvious, but there might be some use to sort of discussing it. It's really someone who's commenting or really wondering how it is that, you know, movies, which used to be some of her favorite films, are very enjoyable, etc., or exciting, you know, adventure, dramatic, somehow, you know, don't feel right anymore, and they're as if the juice has been drained from them. I know we had a conversation about that the other day, so maybe you would like to answer her about that.
The truth of the matter is that the entire cosmos has been watching a very bad movie and getting their kicks out of it. Mother, as the eternal mother that has birthed all life, including her first creation, which is the father, and they function as a unit at this point. But mother actually went into the fall herself in order to bring her children out of the screen on which they were designed as a two-dimensional image into that which is real. So she actually went in there herself. When she was in there, most of the population of the cosmos watched what she was doing like a drama that was unfolding, while they themselves gravitated towards inactivity. They overpolarized and became more stagnant. And what that did is it made her become more active, because we empower that which we focus on, so the drama for her was increased. Her hardship by their doing that increased. So there was, in fact, a situation where there was a real counterpart to it in the cosmos of watching the pain and suffering of another and finding it to be your entertainment because you have forfeited your own life. When that was altered and fixed by mother after bringing her children out of the screen into more realness, the real part of such a practice was removed. And many more people are feeling physically uncomfortable in the presence of the violence and the depravity that is being shown on screens. I have, for so many years, not had the capability of television shows in my home that I can't even remember when last it was. But I've raised my daughter without television, just with carefully chosen videos. But even the videos like Snow White and Anastasia and all these Walt Disney videos, even those, many of them have become repugnant to us because they still thrive on this age-old battle between good and evil. And as of June of 2007, that also is no longer a reality within the cosmos.
Well,
so,
yeah.
It's not real anymore, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that explains it for me as well, because I remember that years ago I found the Lord of the Rings very enjoyable, but recently when I was watching the first one, I suddenly had this different experience and really just thought that there were quite a lot of ghastly monsters actually parading on the screen, and I'd never actually... You know, I think I've seen the film probably three times before, but now it was just as if it was a different movie, or if I'd been watching something different previously.
Well, I would presume that not only is it that we have changed because of the dramatic changes that have taken place in especially humanity, which Mother has metamorphosed into what she calls a superhumanness. Our life force centers move to the heart. Our DNA has changed. Multiple centers in the endocrine system has been opened. New spirals of light have been put in the bloodstream, and she has remade us entirely anew, fulfilling the prophecy in Revelations that says all things shall be made new. So that there... is one of the reasons, but the second reason is something that previously had a message behind it, because it actually was occurring in the cosmos, that the soul would register it as something of importance, something real, something
right.
That can make a difference in our perception. And once it's gone, it's just a hollow shell of ickiness, you know?
Yeah, that my thoughts exactly. And when you say, actually two things I wanted to ask about. First of all, when you say the cosmos is watching this drama, you know, with the mother on center stage, how do we relate to this concept of watching? I mean, is it in a very literal sense, or is it basically a part of every being is somehow attached to the drama, or... I mean, is it the watching conscious, or is it on a different level?
For humans, it's not conscious, but for other beings, it is. Humans are the densest of all creations. That's why we have been the leaders in the ascension that started with the planet and that has rippled throughout the cosmos. Because it's from the bottom, it's from the densest levels that the raising up of life has to take place. So... the rest of the cosmos is very much aware of what they're doing. Humans live a double life. In the dream time, they live like the rest of the cosmos, in which they're aware of things. But then when they're in their awake state, the language of the dream time doesn't necessarily translate into insights. That's why we've given some attention to it. For instance, in The Ring of Truth, which is the book that writes about the changes that took place in the cosmos in August of 2006 when the poles in the cosmos reversed. So it explains how life is different. But also, and see, that could be right there another issue around the movies, because previously opposite matter and energy attracted. Then it started to repel. So even though we might have had this fascination with the opposite matter or energy of a movie, now it would be repelling. So
okay,
the laws of existence might be part of it, don't you think?
Yes, I think so. But when you say opposite matter and energy, what do you mean? I mean, I know what you mean, but just for clarity.
Well, for instance, light workers were often born into very dysfunctional families, because as the little soul was coming into be birthed, it was attracted to the opposite matter and energy from what it was. we would attract people into our life with falsehood if we lived in honesty.
Right.
And so forth.
Which would explain why historically light workers have had a lot of very dysfunctional people in relationships. And
exactly.
All right. And when you say that, like, was prophesied in Revelations that everything was made anew, what does that mean? I mean, how do we relate to that idea?
Well, first of all, Mother remade our spirits, our souls. And now, a soul and spirit is technically not the same. But she remade the souls, which is the way that that overall individuation expresses. She has even remade our spirits, which is the individuation itself, remaking it into higher orders and higher levels. She has done this multiple times. And somehow, beings have always chosen to go back to their old illusion. And so, the last few months here of 2007, Mother actually said, well, even though I have removed the patterns of the old out of the physical, when I remake the spirit or the soul, which the soul is like a specific expression of the spirit, even though I've redone that in the past and it didn't work, and I removed the patterns of illusion out of the physical, the cells themselves are like little microcosms of the macrocosm, which is the whole body. And so they themselves hold memory. And so it just didn't work. So Mother actually redid every atom in the cosmos. Every atomic, at every atomic and subatomic level, every space, every membrane, everyone's bodies were redone entirely to give them another shot at it. And, you know, two-thirds of them again chose not to go to the next level.
And with two-thirds, I take it you're referring to very recent developments?
Yes, this is only the last few months of 2007.
All right. And so I take it then when everything is made anew, it's really sort of cleansed of its old weight or luggage, or is it different than that?
It is if the cellular memory is changed. Then the only issue is how much do we want to hold on to, because the electromagnetic fields around the body also hold memory.
Okay. Have they been cleansed as well then?
I don't think they have.
Okay.
That might be exactly where the problem lies. I will ask the mother.
That sounds plausible. All right. Next question is actually from one of the pod members who, well, I mean, you're the order of the serpent, which is going to, well, let's say, arise in Canada, though even it's of the Caucasus, isn't actually there yet, but she has obviously heard some information about what you've said about the Ida and the Pingala merging, the two serpents. And really the question is if you could sort of explain what the implications are of this or what this really means.
Yes, I'll be happy to. The white magic that once existed in the midst of man and was part of their way of life has, in fact, long during the cycles of the fall, been forgotten, and the DNA developed in a way that it was no longer even feasible. So Mother recently has changed the DNA of humans to once again restore that which is incorruptible white magic. It cannot be used in any way other than that which is life-enhancing, not just for one, but for all. If it is self-centered in being life-enhancing, it will not work. So in December of 2006, through a group of masters that came through a time tunnel through at the area of Clonmacnoy in Ireland, on the 28th of January, they came through. There was a group of them that came through. And after that, Isis herself actually closed that tunnel. And so the Order of the White Rose was established on the Irish lands as the feminine pole to bring back white magic to man. The masculine pole was in September of 2007, established on the North American continent in America, which is the Order of the White Dove. And throughout the ages, 13 Native American tribes located exactly where the joints of the dove that you overlay over this continent, and Hertek did some work with that 30 years ago, they held sacred secrets pertaining to this restoration of the dove. That was very disrupted. Only two of the tribes remained, one of them on the St. Lawrence Island, and another one is part of the Alaskan Indians. But only two of them remained and held secrets for this restoration and this time. The neutral pole, being both feminine and masculine, if something is neutral, is to be established in Canada at the end of January 2008. And it will take place when I am there for a class, and we call them classes, but they are gatherings of masters. And those that know in their heart they should be there will simply be there. So it's not that I am opening the classes to many, many, many students. People contact us. They say, we want to come to class. I ask the mother if it's time, they come, whether they know much about the work or not. So the end of January 2008, in Canada, the Order of the Serpent will be established. Rogier is accurate in that there was a white serpent and a red serpent, and two distinct bodies of magic that formed one neutral pole. But recently, Mother joined the Ida and Pingala, which are two energy channels that were in a serpentine sort of DNA strand fashion, crisscrossing with each other through the pranic tube around the spine. And we've illustrated that in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. In November 2007, Mother joined those into one. And now we have one, the magic of the serpent. There's only one serpent. There is no longer the two different serpents. So within us, those channels also have joined into one.
But have you any idea what the implications are of that? I mean, I think that there are yoga disciplines, etc., which assume there to be two and are actually geared at some sort of fusion. But would this change anything in the the way the human the body works or functions?
Yes, it would. But let's do this. Let's take a few minute quick break here, and we'll be right back.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer and in the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almi's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And we have been talking about the merging of the Ida and Pingala, the feminine and the masculine serpentine channels that were in like a DNA strand on either side of the pranic tube up the spine. That in November of 2007, the Infinite Mother decreed by writing it in the Book of Life, and so it became the reality that they would join into the pranic tube and join to one. So Ruchir, who is with us and has compiled questions, has asked what the ramifications of that is for human life. How will life be different as a result? The cells at the base of the spine, there is a cluster of cells. There used to be 8 original cells that would never renew themselves but always remain the same because they held the blueprint for life within them. The cluster of cells at the base of the spine for humans also has been changed to 96 cells. So there's 12 clusters of 8. And this was done by Mother as part of this massive configurational changes of humanity to metamorphose them into what could be called superhumanists, their next level of evolution that humanists should be expressing as. Now, the original cells at the base of the spine, and we understand up there on 96, have to communicate with the pineal. It is the pineal gland in the center of the brain that is actually the one that interprets this blueprint that we come into life with at birth. The problem was that as blockages happened in the Ida and Pingala, for example, if a man is abused sexually as a child, or he's severely beaten by a father, or he's made to feel stupid by a father, or any of those things occur, it can make a break in that masculine meridian, the masculine one of those two serpents that go up the spine. When a break like that happens, the blueprint that he has to live out cannot fully be interpreted by making its way up that channel, so he will not fully express as a man the way he was destined to express, because of the severing or the breakage or the blockages that trauma could cause. So by joining them into one, the message getting through from the cells at the base of the spine to the pineal gland is far, far more able to be heard, interpreted. They come through strongly because it's not possible to break the whole pranic tube. Now, it's possible to have areas of denser energy, and that is because we don't live life fully. For example, the pranic energy is very key to personal power. If we do not live sexuality fully. Now, I need to explain that our sexual relationship is first and foremost with ourselves. It's the appreciation of our body. It's the living of our senses. It's the wonderful awareness we bring through those senses to the outer world moment by moment. The eating of a crisp apple with its juice running down your chin, the raindrops on your face when you are walking in the rain without an umbrella. Those wonderful tactile and all the senses experiences moment by moment. That's our love affair. And that's our love affair with life. And if we don't have that, to try and compensate for it with sexual activity doesn't quite do the trick. So we have more to bring to a sexual relationship when that is in place. So the not living of certain portions of our self-expression may create clogs in the pranic tube, but the ability of it to be broken and sever the messages coming through is far, far less. So there's far more chance of our fulfilling our fullest potential. That's number one. The number two is that those messages, when they travel through the heart, they then have to go to the base of the skull. Then they go upwards. The point is that that passageway also is to bring interpretation of the feelings of the heart. We have a blueprint of what we're capable of, but it is the feelings of the heart that join us. So this way they go right through the heart in the form of a big pranic tube. The message comes of what we are capable of, the heart tells us what makes our heart sing, and jointly this becomes our self-made destiny and is interpreted then by the pineal gland.
Okay. Well, that's good news. And previously when you were talking about the meridians and the way it can be overridden, that's what you mean, right, with this collapsed meridian and how it can manifest in,
They can break. And the pranic tube will not break. It can be clogged because we choose not to live certain things, or we don't get the insights from experiences, and hence past trauma could, you know, create denser blockages, but it won't break the way the Ida and the Pingala could. It's a more stable system.
All right. Okay, next question?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure how much this person has read of your books, I think this would be only in your books, but the question is really if Isis was one of the Anunnaki, and if so, how that could be. And I think the assumption is that Anunnaki is automatically a bad thing. So maybe you could tell the story about that one.
Well, in our own Sumerian records, there is mention of the Anunnaki who came from the planet Nibiru. And Nibiru, according to our Sumerian records, is on an elliptical orbit that comes only to the other side of Mars and then moves out back again, that it comes here every 3,600 years. And there is the theory that the Star of Bethlehem was in fact Nibiru. So they mention the Anunnaki as the ruling class, with Ra, the Egyptian king. You know, later on they called themselves gods, but they were no more gods than the man in the moon. They simply had superior technology. Thoth is one of them. Very treacherous being who has paraded as being benign throughout the ages. But the records of Isis expose that. And in the book Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revealing the Mysteries of Isis, which is a translation of records from the libraries of Isis that I did in conjunction with the Ascended Masters of the Order of the White Rose that came through that tunnel, as I explained earlier on in the show. So it's also given by the history keepers, the dual life that he lived, the duplicity that he lived, by the history keepers of the cosmos, which is a kingdom assigned to that task by the Infinite Mother. They gave me the history of the cycles of the fall, which I took down in the form of dictation, and it forms the second half of the book, The Gift of the Unicorns. The Anunnaki were the governing people on Earth. But Isis did not come into their lineages in the form of birth. This is in the records of Isis, where she says that she was neither born nor did she ever die. So that she actually materialized a body as the daughter of Enlil, very beloved daughter, and their memories were all of them changed, that she never actually came in through their lineages, but that she wanted to remind all of creation on earth that the mother existed. So she started to create goddess temples. She had to have the backing of their technology. For instance, she had to have a spaceship that she could go where she wanted to on earth. And she did various things to promote light at that time to attempt to get the ascension to fully happen. Isis came into that family because it was the most convenient way to bring light to the people. But she was not born as one of them, although they think that she was. The masters that have come into Ireland from Egypt, they have come in, memories have been changed, people around them believe that they were part of their families, but they only came in on the 28th of January, 2006. It's a similar situation.
Well, I know that can be pretty mind-boggling to compute such a scenario, but could you just, before we go into that one, just relate, so what this family would have then looked like, the Anunnaki family, and, you know, because a lot of people are aware of the sort of the familiar characters in that one. I mean, was Thoth in it, and was Enki in there?
Enki was the brother of Isis's father Enlil. Enki became known in Egypt as Ptah. And Ra, his real name to the Anunnaki was Marduk. Thoth's real name to the Anunnaki was Ningish-Zida. And Isis was very much in love with Thoth's younger brother, Osiris. His actual name was Demuzi. And so Thoth has been one of the villainous gods of the cosmos. Thoth was not born into that family either. He also followed Isis when she came in to try and bring light to the planet. He came in, but his was an attempt to rule the world. And from there, he wanted to do a lot more. But that information is given in the Isis book, which is Opening the Doors of Heaven, as well as the book of the unicorns.
All right, would we then say that Anunnaki are automatically, evil creatures, or is it more complicated than that?
They are, like humans, there are good ones and there are bad ones and there are selfish ones and there are not so selfish ones, all of the above. But now, of course, if you add very advanced technology into the equation, the chances for doing harm is a lot more. But perhaps we can take a very short commercial break and we'll be right back.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. Brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse, Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
We have come to the end of our day together here, for the end of our hour at least, and we're hoping that you will join us again next week. We are indeed in extraordinary times. Great changes are happening across the cosmos, and man is playing a vital role in those. It is a time of hope. We have long since moved beyond the place where the scary prophecies still hold any value. 2012, we passed during the end of 2005 as time sped up. We are in a massive cosmic ascension, and we wish to share this with you both on this show and also in our other show called Windows into Eternity, Understanding Concepts of Ascension. We hope that you will join us for both those shows on a regular basis. We are always delighted to hear your questions when you email them to us. And thank you very much for this time together.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Almeen. Please join us again next week.